creatures. Linda Godfrey joins us. Sit back and get ready for this ride on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Linda Godfrey is one of the most respected authorities on anomalous animals and paranormal phenomena all over the place, specifically too in Wisconsin. As a journalist, she was the first to break the story of a very terrifying werewolf-like monstrosity lurking in the shadow-shrouded forests around Elkhorn, Wisconsin's Bray Road. Godfrey has continued to pursue her interest in the unknown. Her latest work, American Monsters. That's kind of scary, Linda. Welcome back.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me back.
Tell me about American Monsters.
Well, American Monsters is a book that gives a little wider view of unknown creatures than some of my other books have. People usually think in terms of those unknown, upright, wolf-like creatures.
Yeah.
With what I write. But the truth is that since the very beginning, people have sent me descriptions and reports of all sorts of things, not just the wolf-like creatures. So I've had this small but steadily growing larger collection over the last two decades. And I told my editors I would like to show that there is a breadth and a depth to the sightings of all these strange creatures across the Americas, from shore to shining shore. And I'd like people to understand that they seem to like to inhabit the same places. They have history. They go back to ancient times, and yet people are still seeing them today, and we still don't know what they are. You know, and I thought laying them all out as best I could. It's very difficult to sort them accurately, but just laying them out. It sort of astonished me when I began researching a few of the areas that I hadn't written about as much in depth, for instance, some of the large birds, just how much more is out there than I think anybody realizes.
Well, there's a lot out there. Let's talk about the various creatures then that you looked at in American Monsters. How many different kinds, Linda?
Wow. Well, it depends on how finely you cut those designations, but I did generally group them into three areas by air, land, and sea, you know, the main elements. It's really the easiest way to do it because, and even then, there are some troubles because you have some creatures that generally run around on two legs or they look like they should, and yet they've got wings or vice versa. And, you know, when it comes to unknown creatures, you know, a lot of them just don't fit the ordinary scientific taxonomy groups. So it's always a bit of a guessing game, but you know, there are hundreds of different things out there.
How did you get interested in creatures, Linda?
Well, I'd always been interested in unusual things. My dad was kind of a science fiction and UFO nut. We always had you know, the True Men's magazines and all those early sci-fi things, so I was somewhat used to that, but I really hadn't thought about anything like actual strange creatures, other than maybe Bigfoot a little bit, until, of course, back in 1992, I broke the story of the Beast of Bray Road, which refers to the fact that a whole bunch of very sane and sober, incredible people around Elkhorn, Wisconsin, started telling our local animal control officer that they were seeing what they interpreted as something like a werewolf on this 3-mile road outside of Elkhorn called Bray Road. And when I investigated, not only did I find that the people seemed like they were telling the truth, but here we had a county official who was marking down reports of werewolves and actually had a manila file folder. That impressed me. You know, I thought, here's somebody taking this seriously. The people seem serious. They're obviously seeing something. And I wrote about it. It went national. And I started receiving correlating reports from all over the country and the world. And I realized that there was something very large here, much bigger than just a few people in a small town in Wisconsin seeing some kind of crazy creature. And that's borne out because it's 22 years later, and I'm still getting these reports from not just Wisconsin, but around the country and the world.
Has anybody gotten hurt by these creatures?
Not to my knowledge, not from the reports that I've received myself. You know, I've heard about a few reports here and there, but they're nothing that I've been able to confirm. Now, there's been one exception. It was a man some years ago who was taking a hike around Quebec province in Canada, came across an upright wolf-like creature. It lunged at him and left a gash on his side and hip. Now, I will say that there are a few others. When you get into the big bird report, you have some reports of these large, and I'm not talking, you know, like big like an eagle. I'm talking big like something prehistoric, something with a 20-foot or bigger wingspan, you know, supposedly taking children away. There was supposed to have been one child that was killed, I believe, another one that was injured. And then occasionally you get these reports. Usually they're from long ago. When you get in the sea creatures, of course, sometimes there are drownings and that kind of thing, but usually not directly from somebody looking at an unknown giant sea creature, you know, actually killing a person. So real injuries and deaths are kind of few and far between, although they do occur from time to time.
Well, let's categorize these, Linda, as we talk throughout the night. We'll segmentize these various creatures. Let's start with the birds, these gigantic birds that people reportedly are seeing all over the place. Are these pterodactyl-type reports or just big bird reports?
Well, actually, there are a number of different ones. As far as the actual, and there are flying things that aren't birds either, which I found really incredible, but when I began looking at them, I found several different categories. One is the giant raptor type, the type that looks like it might be some kind of mutated eagle.
Like a dinosaur, though.
Well, there are those. There are the things that look like flying pterosaurs, or some people would call them pterodactyls, where they have the leathery wings. They don't see feathers. They see kind of a bony crest on the head and the long beak, just, mm-hmm. you know, just straight out of Jurassic Park. The raptor types are more like giant eagles or vultures, that kind of thing. And then there's another kind that looks sort of like a giant stork, you know, with a long beak and feathers and very different looking.
Now, which ones get the wider variety of reports, the bird-like or the dinosaur-like?
Well, it's pretty close, you know, and it seems to sort of depend on the part of the country. There's a huge bird-like flap of sightings around the Midwest in the 60s. The dinosaur ones seem to just crop up oddly here and there throughout time, and they're active, especially in other parts of the world, too. They're also called the Congamato or the Ropen, depending on who's writing about them. They were supposed to have been extinct 65 million years ago, which makes it really kind of an odd thing. But some people are claiming that there are colonies of them alive, especially in places like Papua New Guinea. There have been researchers that have gone to New Guinea and observed these strange dinosaur-looking things seeming to glow at night. They're putting forth the theory in some cases that they have bioluminescence, which is something we usually only think of with our deep-sea creatures. But who's to say that perhaps this isn't something that could still happen today? And it gets even stranger. You know, it's one thing to think about these things in the wilds of Papua New Guinea, mm-hmm. but then you get them such as those seen in near Winder, Georgia, in 2008. There was a woman driving along to work in Athens, Georgia. She's on a rural wooded stretch of Highway 82. It's August. And then something flies in front of her car across the road from right to left, and so low that she thought it was dive-bombing her car. And what she described was a classic pterosaur. It had that hammer-shaped crested head, a long tail, big flapping wings, solid beige, with a kind of a little strange heart-shaped pad, and this doesn't sound like any type of modern bird.
Have there been reports of, because I heard that there were, of these birds scooping up other animals, maybe even kids?
Yeah, there was a very famous incident that happened in Lawndale, Illinois, something around the 60s, I believe that it was, when a bunch of people saw one of these giant birds pick up this little boy and carry him for just a short distance, and I'm thinking this is the one that he was at school. People ran screaming anyway and got the bird to drop the child.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Which, if you can just only imagine how that must have felt.
Where was the bird going to take him? To, like, a huge nest?
Well, you just have to wonder.
Feed him to other bird, the baby birds that were probably as big as the kid?
You know, and that sounds like something out of the Saturday afternoon B-movies, you know, but there's more than one example of that. There was another one, too, where a child was picked up and wasn't rescued in time and, you know, was hurt by, I think, being dropped. And I had some other examples. Somebody actually wrote into the Phantom of Monsters website, one claiming to have seen two birds when he was a child in that same area near Lawndale, and these birds were following them very closely as if they wanted to pick these kids up. So you know that there's probably something is going to be feeding on them if the birds are successful.
How big are these birds, Linda?
They average from, usually people will say the wingspan was somewhere between 10 and 20 feet. There was one sighting that I consider one of the best anywhere, because sometimes these things are just seen in the air. And, you know, it's very hard, if you're just observing something in the air without a tree or land, to really estimate and get the size right. But this was a sighting that occurred just a few years ago in northern Wisconsin up near Hayward. And it occurred to a person who is a middle-aged professional man. His name is John Baldwin. Did not mind his name being used. Who was riding his bike along this nice gravel road in kind of a nice upper-scale vacation development, I guess you might call it. So he's riding along next to this field where there's grass that would come up about to his waist, and he's like 6'3", 6'5", something like that. And he looks over and sees this huge, giant bird standing in these weeds, and the bird was so far above the weeds, he figured it had to have stood 11 or so feet tall. And he knew that because he was so excited. He dropped his bike and just went charging into the field without even thinking. He just had to see what it was. And he realized how much higher the bird was above the grass than he was. And at that point, the bird turned around and looked at him, and he's like, uh-oh, you know, what if this is sitting on a nest? What could it do to me, the size that it is? It could get to me in a second. He had the opportunity then to see it as it began to indeed take off. It didn't luckily go toward him, but started to go to the other direction. But he said its wings made this giant rolling motion. And this was a feathered, somewhat stork-like looking creature. And he said it really looked like it was having difficulty getting itself up off the ground.
Too big.
Yeah, exactly. Like something that maybe should have been trying to take off from a cliff or something like that. And it finally did get itself up in the air and sort of seemed to use the road that he'd been going down as a guide. And he said he looked, and its wingspan more than covered the road. I went up there and interviewed him, visited the spot, and it was kind of one of these older asphalt, sometimes gravel roads, but the road measured at least 20 feet wide. And he said it careened as it went, you know, kind of still struggling a little bit to stay flapping. And he knew what was down that road. There was a small airport, and he was certain that something must have seen it, that it should have shown up on radar, and yet he was never able to find anyone else who would admit to having seen it that day.
Jeez, frightening. Did you remember the report of the guy in his Cessna in Alaska, and one of these huge birds flew up right next to his plane, and it was as big as the Cessna plane?
Yeah, that's... It was described as looking more like this humongous eagle. And it was in a story on, a Reuters story on CNN.com. And yet villagers in Manokotak and Tokiak, and I hope I'm pronouncing those right, still compared it in size and in the way that it flew to Jurassic Park. But some people, other people saw it. You know, it wasn't just the guy flying the plane. Other people saw it on the ground and thought that it was a small airplane.
And so there've got to be these creatures out there.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what else they could all be seeing. I mean, you get people who are expert pilots. This pilot actually was at a level of 1,000 feet when he saw this creature. And he described it as having at least a 14-foot wingspan. It was... The local bird experts, biologists, tried to say that it was a Steller's sea eagle, but that would have had to have flown across the ocean from Japan and has very distinctive black and white plumage, which nobody really described. So it's hard to say what it was, but it was something with all these people having witnessed it.
Well, in Alton, Illinois, there's been a Native American myth story over the years, Linda, about the Piesaw bird.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they go on to talk about how, you know, the chief fought it and it grabbed him and it was huge. And on the banks of the Mississippi above the bluffs, there mm-hmm. is a painting that they did. Native American Indians painted a picture of this horrid-looking bird, but it was huge, absolutely huge. So there's got to be something to these stories. And what amazes me is trying to picture a nest with big eggs, with baby birds in there, and a mama bird comes by and drops in a pet or some kid or something so they could have him for dinner. I mean, that is a frightening thought.
Yeah, no parent wants to think about anything like that, that's for sure.
No. Not with your kid, not with your pet.
No, exactly. And I've had, actually it was another investigator told me that he had seen not exactly one of these birds, but more like one of the bat-winged creatures up on a roof, and it was huge. It was like too big to be on the roof, looking down at him when he was pushing his child in a stroller, and as if it was eyeing, you know, the child and trying to figure out, how much the child weighed and if he could get it. And he just turned around and ran home the other way, he said.
Well, all right. Well, Linda, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk more about your work, American Monsters. We're going to talk about some sea creatures next when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to email me, that's George@coasttocoastam.com. Well, our next category with Linda Godfrey, of course, will be sea monsters, and we'll come back on land. So, Linda, what kind of sea monsters are we talking about in your work?
Well, pretty much everything scary that goes below, on, and above the water. And those can vary from your classic. When you say sea monster, everybody gets this general picture in their head of something that looks like the ancient plesiosaurs or ocean-going dinosaurs, which had kind of bulbous bodies, those long classic necks, the little heads, and then the flippers. And that's also, you know, it denotes creatures like the Loch Ness Monster and that sort of thing. But you can get everything in these sightings from things that look like long swimming serpents or eels to... things that are actually giant squids. The beast called the Kraken was thought to be just the product of many sailors' imaginations until the giant and colossal squid species started washing up on shore and people realized they were actually were that huge and could do some damage to a ship if they got a hold of one.
So let's talk a little bit about mermaids or mer people. What do you think of them?
Well, you know, this is a subject that, I mean, it seems like it should not be possible. I call the mermaids people acting fishy. A lot of the times, you know, it's the stories that occasionally seem fishy, and people will say, well, why are you calling a mermaid a monster? You know, it's just sort of a swimming human. But actually, if you go back to, say, early Greek descriptions of them, and again, this is something that is not only seen today, but goes way back to antiquity. You had something that the Greeks called the Tritons, and they were actually pretty scary creatures and were feared. They had green hair on their head, scales, breathing organs below their ears, broad mouth with the teeth of animals, rough hands like shells, and tails like dolphins. Now, it's hard to say exactly what they were seeing. Some people have said, well, they're seeing a manatee or something like that. But manatees, if you see one close up to a human, are quite different. And, you know, you wouldn't be seeing hair and facial descriptions and things like that. But there have, especially over in the Caspian Sea, over by Russia, there's been some really interesting modern examples. There was one in the spring of 2005, and fishing boats were spotting what they called the merman. And they would say that the creature would swim parallel courses near the boats, and they could see that it had hair and weird-looking fins and also arms, muscular, and not huge, 5.5 feet in length, with webbed fingers. But, you know, it didn't strike them as friendly. It didn't seem like something that they wanted to haul on the boat, if they could have.
If they could have.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to imagine. The creature would be bound to be very elusive in its own element. And there are kind of almost mythic-sounding tales of people who claim to have caught mermaids in their nets. Back more in the 1500s, 1600s, there were some accounts around Europe of what they called a mermaid washing up on the beach. But generally, these people didn't seem to be anything other than castaways that had perhaps washed up from a wreck or something and then couldn't talk. And yet they were sort of feared. They were, anybody thought to be different was considered a monster, you know, in those days. And there was one in Denmark that became very famous and may have been the origin of some of the Hans Christian Andersen tales.
Where did the Gator Man pop in?
The Gator Man is actually one of the contemporary water creature stories that scares me the most. This is actually something that's ongoing. It's been occurring over several years with a particular witness who has a real high degree of credibility, working for a Florida Paleontology Museum. He's a young man, also working toward his college degrees in these subjects, spends a lot of time in the water, works as a guide part-time, some of these things. And he began noticing that when he was out on his family boat, he started by seeing this weird, upright-looking creature that he thought was an alligator, and then it would stand up, and he noticed that it had much larger and more muscular legs and arms than an alligator would. It had a head that resembled a prehistoric sort of alligator's head, much more than the normal flat-topped modern alligator head. And the thing began sort of chasing him in his boat. He would either see it standing on the shore, sort of regarding him, or it would be in the water actually swimming toward him, you know, and he had been afraid a few times for his life. He feels that it has followed him. He's even seen it come to his dock. He's had friends in the boat with him who have seen it, and he wants to remain anonymous because he thinks it might affect his future career adversely if his colleagues would find out that he's been seeing this thing that shouldn't be. But I did my best to draw kind of my artist's conception of it, and it sort of creeped me out. He said that it was, the drawing was pretty close. Of course, it's a stylized drawing. It's not going to, you know, be perfectly anatomically correct or anything. But alligators are kind of fearsome to people because, you know, they have these big jaws. They're very different from us. They will eat people or animals or whatever they can get. Although
whatever they can get.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And when you, you know, it reminded me of Peter Pan and Captain Hook with that giant crocodile going after him with you know, his watch and his tick-tocking. And the thing is that this is an ongoing sort of thing. It hasn't gone away, and the person is still observing it and trying to take very copious notes. He's been able to record so much about it that I was able to use a lot of his own words, which I think makes it even more interesting.
Lots of strange creatures down there at the bottom of the sea, Linda, that pop up. And did you look at all at the Loch Ness Monster, or you just primarily concentrated on American monsters, as the title says?
Well, yeah, I tried to, you know, I referenced some of the European area and from other parts of the world when they serve as a comparison or an example. So much has been written about the Loch Ness Monster, but we have very similar creatures in the Americas, and a lot of the skeptics say apply to one as well as the other. For instance, people have said, well, the Loch Ness Monster cannot really exist because the lake is not big enough to hold a breeding population. You know, a large animal like that needs so much water, it needs so much prey to sustain itself, and they just don't see that. Well, the same thing is true with many lakes in the Americas, and yet you can have up to hundreds of people claiming to have seen these unusual creatures from time to time. There are oftentimes flaps where the creatures will emerge and be prevalent for a decade or two decades, and then they go away and aren't seen again, and nobody knows where they went. Some people believe there are underground channels between our bodies of water that are more navigable to creatures like this than we would think, and that perhaps they can get around from one place to another. I know that's been proposed for Loch Ness and may also hold true, for all we know, to some of the American lakes.
Do you think people are seeing, for example, with some of these sea creatures, large snakes or anything like that?
Well, yeah, there are definitely animals that could be mistaken. There are great-sized eels, and there may be some that we're not even aware of as a species. There's something called the oarfish or the ribbon fish, which is sort of shaped like a very long, long eel or serpent and has kind of a funny red fringe on its head that could be mistaken for some type of a sea monster. So, yeah, part of it is that some of these may be unrecognized or unknown species or mistaken sightings of known creatures that we just don't realize are that large. On the other hand, there certainly are some that just sound like these more like a prehistoric beast that we don't believe should be around yet.
What are drownsters?
Drownsters are my own term that I coined for these things that wash up on the beach. And
are they dead?
They're dead, yeah. They're usually hairless and have suffered some body erosion. And what happens with a lot of them, when you get either things nibbling at them or the tissues shrinking in death, they will shrink away from claws and teeth to make those things appear longer than you'd expect to see them. And so you can have something that's like a dead raccoon that washes on the beach, and it looks like something unknown to science, and yet they will find out that it's a raccoon or in some cases, a term that I did not coin, somebody else made up, the globsters that look kind of like gelatinous masses, and these have been shown to be basking sharks, actually. But yet they're always referred to as monsters in headlines and by the media.
How many of these creatures, Linda, would be just natural, part of this planet, animals, creatures, as opposed to something supernatural?
Well, are we talking about the just the ones that wash up or...
Overall.
Well, a lot of them, you know, and I kind of extrapolate from the upright wolf-like creatures that I observe. In that case, probably 90% or more of the reports I receive just show something that could be a natural animal behaving weirdly. And, you know, I think that perhaps in the case of the large birds and some of these sea creatures, certainly, we might just have adaptations or mutations that we don't know about yet, things that really have very small population bases and aren't recognized by people. You don't usually get reports in most of these cases of things that have glowing red eyes or seem to partially vanish or look translucent. Although, hopping back to the flying things for a moment, when you get to Mothman, for example, all of the things that John Keel investigated in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, that's sort of an exception because you have UFOs coming into play. You have a flying creature that seems to change shape. People describe it in different ways. So it sort of depends on the creature. But overall, I think there are a large number that could be misidentified or unknown animals of some type.
What's the difference between, let's go back on land for a little bit here, the werewolves that you've been talking about that are known as the upright canine?
What's the difference between...
The werewolves and what you call the upright canines.
Oh, I see, yes. Traditional werewolves.
I got to ask you, by the way, you're jostling your phone a lot, so be careful.
Yeah, okay? I'm sorry, my cord seems to be... I don't know if it's a little bit loose where it's attached or something right now. When I move my head, it seems to have a side. I will. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't believe that the things most people report to me on that score, as far as the upright wolves are concerned, or dogmen, whatever you want to call them, are the same things as people who are talking about traditional werewolves are talking about. Traditional werewolves are supposed to be people changing into animals. They come out in the full moon. They bite people, and then you become one. They have superhuman strength and that sort of thing. Whereas most of the upright canine-type creatures that people report to me have very dog or wolf-like features. They don't have human features in any way, and they can walk and run upright, but that's something that's not a supernatural trait. It's something that any sort of canine can do if it's motivated or trained. It's just that they don't normally do that in the wild, and we're always very surprised when we see one doing that. But if you Google merengue dancing dog or upright walking dog, you can see examples of canines and even bears, other quadrupeds that can manage this feat. So I think when there are occasional sightings that sound like they have supernatural features, maybe we're looking at some other sort of phenomenon.
Well, these werewolf type, are they shapeshifters? I mean, can people see them actually change for, let's say, from a human to a wolf?
I've had only really just 3 or 4 out of hundreds over 22 years where people have said something like that. And they're usually not the same type of sightings where people are, you know, driving down the road and they see this thing running alongside them. Normally they're closer to habitations or something like that. They're a lot different. So I don't rule out that there are let's see, what would we call it? Things, skills and abilities that the human mind and body can perform that we're not really able to document well by science. I think that people may perhaps be able to project their energy or other bodies, whatever you want to call it, auras, to mimic some of these creatures. I don't like to put any sort of limits on what the human mind and consciousness is capable of, nor do I wish to say that there aren't possibly other entities or energies or spirits that may be out there doing these things.
Now, you've also looked at Bigfoot, Sasquatch. What's your take?
Yeah, it's really, I think, one of the strongest arguments for an unknown creature that seems to, having so many witnesses, by its actions and behavior and what they see it doing, that really seems and acts like a flesh and blood creature. People will see it with young ones. They'll see it collecting food, running around, chasing deer, carrying, say, a haunch of deer meat slung over its shoulder or under its arm, interacting with people in ways, throwing rocks, doing all these things that you wouldn't think it would need to do if it were some sort of mere spirit, you know. And I've had what I had to finally conclude must have been a Bigfoot encounter myself, where I just couldn't imagine what other kind of creature would have the strength to do what I saw done, you know, with my own eyes. And not to mention vocalizations. And I know so many people, and these are people that I know well, that I've talked to at great length, who've had great looks at them in the daytime or under good lights, sometimes from as close away as 10 feet. A couple I know had one stop on a bridge right in front of their car, 10 feet away, directly in the headlights, and they watched it drop down 15 feet to the creek bed below and run off. But they both saw it, you know, at the same time. I just think there are too many great witnesses to say that there's no such thing as Bigfoot.
There's got to be something out there. Too many people have witnessed strange creatures.
Right, in my belief.
Wendigo, what is that?
The Wendigo has gotten to be one of the better-known Native American, I'll say mythic creatures, that comes out of their legend and their lore. It varies somewhat from tribe to tribe, and I think because of that, there's been some confusion whether it's often portrayed as a dogman-type creature or a Bigfoot-type creature. You know, there's a lot of confusion as to what it actually looks like. But when I go back to the old sources, for instance, the stories that were told about it by some of the first French-Canadian and English fur trappers who were talking back in the 1600s, they're describing something that relates to starvation and cannibalism that occasionally would happen in the northern forest.
Hold on, Linda. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about that and also take some phone calls about these strange creatures next on Coast to Coast AM.